You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
France prepares for election hacking. Ukraine Ergo acknowledges its electrical service was hacked. Malwarebytes reports on fruit fly, malware swarming around biomedical research facilities. Krebs believes he's found the author of Mirai. Anonymous says it's going to dox U.S. President-elect Trump. And the RSA conference announces the finalists in the Innovation Sandbox. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, January 19, 2017. France continues to prepare for election hacking. ANSSI, the country's National Information System Security Agency, has warned political parties and others to expect attempts on their networks. So far, one political movement, En Marche, led by former socialist Emmanuel Macron, now running as an independent, has acknowledged being hacked. The major parties so far have nothing to report. ANSSI's responsibilities include securing the vote at the polling places, and as the electorate's choices are transmitted through regional prefectures to the Ministry of the Interior for their final official tally. The leading suspect against which ANSSI and the Ministry of Defense are warning would be, of course, Russia. Farther east, Ukraine Ergo, the electrical utility that supplies Kiev, confirmed to Reuters that last month's power outages were indeed the result of a cyber attack. The utility found that workstations and SCADA systems connected to the major north substation came under external influence. Ukraine Ergo declined to attribute the attack to any particular actor. Speculation, again of course, has pointed to Russia. But they did say, quote, "The analysis of the impact of symptoms on the initial data of these systems indicates a premeditated and multi-level invasion," end quote. Security of industrial control systems remains a matter of much concern. We spoke with Nir Giller of CyberX, who believes that a false sense of security still surrounds industrial control systems.
People might have the perception of security by obscurity. And this comes into play when people think about serial interfaces or technology which is proprietary. And people tend to think that because no one has the inner workings or the documentation of the actual software, hardware, it might mean that the attacker cannot attack these devices. And that's security by obscurity. It has never been proven to be successful. Obscurity is something that with enough resources, you can always bypass and figure out what you need to figure out as an attacker and get your way. So I think that this is something that needs to be very well understood within industrial environments, because it seems that there are a lot of proprietary technologies, although as time passes by, more and more people relate to the concept that attackers can attack proprietary protocols and systems. We see examples more and more frequently. And so I believe that in order to actually protect an industrial environment, you need the ultimate answer is that you need detection. You need a solution which is capable very efficiently and very wisely to do detection within the industrial environment, and you need to do so continuously. Because if you have a firewall that's separating between the IT and the OT environment, it doesn't mean that you won't get attacked. There's a very good probability that the firewall will be bypassed. You as an asset owner of the industrial environment, the OT environment, you need to remember that cybersecurity is all about risks. And you need to have the right system put in and the right methodology to make sure that you are continuously protected, because you will get attacked, whether it's highly targeted or a simple attack, but the network will be attacked, and you need the tools in place to make sure that you have detection. And once an attack will be detected, you will be able to take the right actions in order to mitigate the incident.
That's Nir Giller from CyberX. Security researchers at the firm Malwarebytes report finding malicious code used in targeted attacks against biomedical research centers. The malware affects primarily macOS, but Linux systems are also thought vulnerable. Apple is calling the code Fruitfly. It's multifunctional. It takes screen captures, accesses webcams, and enables attackers to take remote control of an endpoint. Sophisticated, yet with an oddly retro approach to persistence, Fruitfly is thought to have circulated undetected for several years. Malwarebytes speculates that its highly targeted character helped it evade notice. Krebs on Security investigates Anna Senpai, as Mirai's creator has come to be known, tracking her or him or them through Minecraft and Rutgers. Krebs names names, and if we follow him, we can safely call Anna Senpai him. Krebs notes that Mirai, the botnet-herding malware that took down his site and other services, most famously OVH in France and Dyn in the United States last autumn, had ancestors. Its forebears went by Bashlight, Gafgit, Qbot, Remitin, and Torlus. In 2014, hoods calling themselves LelDOS amused themselves by taking down Minecraft servers using variants of this ancestor code. The takedowns weren't pure vandalism. Rather, they appear to have been gambits in the highly competitive Minecraft DDoS protection industry. A California security firm, ProxyPipe, which specializes in protecting Minecraft servers, came under effective 300 gigabyte per second distributed denial of service attack in June of 2014. ProxyPipe believes that it was being harassed by competitors, very small one or a few person outfits run by teenagers. The report is worth reading in full at KrebsOnSecurity.com. As the U.S. prepares to inaugurate President-elect Trump tomorrow, the anarcho-hacktivist collective resurfaces to tell Mr. Trump that he will regret the next 4 years. The threat appears to amount to a promise that they'll dox the new president vigorously, something Anonymous began saying at roughly the time Trump announced his candidacy. As you would expect, the CyberWire will be providing special coverage of this year's RSA conference in San Francisco. The meetings run from the 13th to the 17th of February, and that's less than a month away, so it's time to start anticipating. The conference has announced the finalists in its Innovation Sandbox. There's a complete listing of all of the finalists on our website, thecyberwire.com, in today's daily briefing. Congratulations and good luck to them all. We look forward to seeing them in the Sandbox.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Joining me once again is Ben Yellen. He's a senior law and policy analyst at the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security. Ben, saw an interesting article come by in the Columbia Journalism Review. There's a journalist named Ed O, and he had some trouble at the United States border. He is a Canadian citizen, and on his way over the border into the United States, a place he's been many times, he had a pretty significant search. Give us some of the details of this.
Sure. So Ed O was trying to cover the North Dakota protest, the protests over that pipeline that's going through Native American territory. So he was trying to board a flight in Vancouver. And when he was going through customs, without any sort of individualized suspicion, the customs agents interrogated him for 6 hours, looked through his materials, required him to open his electronic devices, even though they had been encrypted. Even though this sort of rings alarm bells for all of us, this seems very unjust, it is constitutional. The border sort of has a special quality to it from a constitutional perspective. The Supreme Court has held that there is an exception to the warrant requirement under the Fourth Amendment search and seizure requirement for special needs searches.
Help me understand that, Ben, because it seems to me that now Mr. O is a Canadian citizen, but it seems to me that as a citizen of the United States, if I come to the border of our country and I have a valid passport, it would strike me that the moment that that passport is accepted and that border agent verifies that I am a United States citizen, that my constitutional rights should kick into place. But that's not the case.
Yeah. So the Supreme Court has held otherwise. They basically determined that even though in some cases where normally a warrant would be required, normally the Fourth Amendment rights would be invoked, for some sort of public policy reason, the government should be able to conduct warrantless searches. It's really an exception to the general rule, but it's something that's very established in Supreme Court jurisprudence. So the best example of this are sobriety checkpoints. When you're driving and you get pulled over at a sobriety checkpoint, there's no individualized suspicion that you yourself have been drinking and driving. They're checking everyone. But the Supreme Court has allowed that because there's a compelling public policy interest in freeing the roads from drunk drivers. That's a public policy interest that we've carved out from Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. So again, this is something that's constitutionally troubling, at least to me, but it is very well established in constitutional jurisprudence.
So where does it stand in terms of being a U.S. citizen? If I'm at the border and I'm, you know, coming back into the United States from a vacation in Canada or Mexico or Europe or wherever, and I have my laptop and my phone, and the border agent says to me, you know, we want to take a look at your electronic devices, what should my response be?
Well, your response should be citing a case called United States v. Cotterman. And this was a case that was decided in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, generally a court that's very favorable to civil liberties challenges. And they held that the United States Border Police or law enforcement at the border cannot examine your electronic storage devices without a reason for suspicion. And this is a holding that has weakened the general border search exception to the Fourth Amendment that we've discussed. Reasonable suspicion is a standard that's used in other areas of law enforcement. I think it's somewhat short of probable cause that somebody's committing a crime. But you still have to have a reason to suspect that there's something untoward on this electronic device. So this decision has been appealed to the United States Supreme Court. So far, the Supreme Court has not taken up the case. This opinion is controlling law. So if you're at the border and you don't want to reveal your electronic information to a forensic examination, cite United States v. Cotterman. You might get some confused looks from your border agents, but you would have good legal recourse.
All right, Ben Yellen, good information as always. Thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.